Economics dominates our lives. We're bombarded almost daily with new information, trade figures, employment trends, investment data, interest rate movements, consumer spending patterns, indexes of business confidence. The list goes on. And like the oracles of old with their animal entrails, economists pick through these stats to tell us what they mean. How well trained are economists to act as our social guides in this way? More than three quarters of economists responding to a recent survey said universities should put their discipline into a broader context, offering more subjects like economic history, the history of economic thought, and so on. But this isn't happening. Dr. Alex Milmo is a senior lecturer in economics at the University of Ballarat and president of the History of Economic Thought Society of Australia. Alex Milmo, welcome.
Hello.
To the National Interest. Are we putting, first of all, too much importance on what economists say?
Well, there's certainly a massive amount of information and talking heads are on the television every day. One wonders if it is just making us a little bit jittery at present. It amplifies all the volatility. But that's one tribe of the econ called the market economists, and that's their job to report on the entrails, the tea leaves of economic data.
But we do seem to get this sort of knee-jerk response to, yeah, you know, the latest bit of information.
Yeah, and there was an article recently by Bruce Littleboy from University of Queensland saying that scares and hiccups that were early reported this year are just all come out of the data. The data might even be revised, so it does make people very jittery, this information. And Australians seem to have, for some reason, have a great love affair with economic news stories. Economics was always on page one. Always remember Malcolm Fraser said he wanted to take economics off the front page. He never did. And recently I was reading Bob Menzies' letters to his daughter, Hella, and even he caught the economics bug. He must have actually taken up an interest in economics because he was reputed not to have any great interest in economics like Whitlam. But he was, even in his letters to his daughter, he's writing about the economy after the 1961 recession.
I thought it was Paul Keating who got us all talking about economics with his J-curve and things like that. I thought it was Paul Keating's fault that we Australians were so obsessed with economics compared to other nations.
I think it was Ian McFarlane, the governor of the Reserve Bank, actually commissioned a study into this in the Reserve Bank Economist, and they actually proved that we had more economic coverage in our newspapers. And that might relate to Keating, who made economics sexy in a way. You know, the beautiful set of numbers, which is currently what we were enjoying until recently.
Somehow we link it to nice suits and well-designed clocks and things like that, I guess.
Yeah.
Now, let's talk about what we teach our economists to be. I mean, you, as I said, are the president of the History of Economic Thought Society of Australia. You're also a former Treasury official, I think.
Oh, just a junior Treasury officer.
Oh, okay. But you've been within the government side of it. But what are students of economics learning these days at university?
Well, the seminars don't seem to be learning much economic history because both the economic historians and the historians of economic thought both have a common complaint that their subjects are being weeded out of economic programs. And yet we had that survey that you quoted there recently that commissioned by the Economic Society of Australia, and 75% of respondents said, yes, there should be more economic history to give us a long view and even more into and more scope into the ideas with these great economists. One of the interesting things about the GFC was it did bring back Keynes, and it didn't. And now we're looking at the Keynes Hayek dispute about government intervention and
so this was a dispute between John Maynard Keynes, yeah, and Friedrich Hayek.
Yeah. They've made YouTubes and videos of it now. Some enterprising American movie producers got a YouTube, a music version, a rap version of Keynes and Hayek, and it's gone into the second version.
And this was a dispute, what, in the 30s in response to the Great Depression. And so whether there should be more spending or less spending or whatever. Yeah.
And I suspect that the reason why economists said overwhelmingly yes to more economic history, more HET, was because of a reaction to the GFC and, you know, doctrinal disputes and the role of these key figures, these wonderful economic intellects like Keynes and Hayek, to some extent Friedman, and Schumpeter, who was another one who was in fashion a few years ago, and he's dropped out recently.
But the point being that students ought to know about this stuff in order to understand where their discipline comes from. But you say they're not learning that.
Well, they're not learning because, I mean, I'm currently writing a review of a woman economist called Joan Robinson, and my first paragraph to say, well, who the hell was Joan Robinson?
Well, she was a very famous economist. I learned about Joan Robinson when I...
If you stopped an economist in the street and you asked him or her, who is Joan Robinson, they probably wouldn't be able to tell you.
Who was Joan Robinson then? Enlighten us.
She was a Cambridge economist who should have won a Nobel Prize, and she actually attacked neoclassical mainstream economics. And she pointed out some theoretical dead ends in it and non sequiturs in it, and she actually undermined it to some extent. And she was a sort of a post-Keynesian economist in the Keynes tradition, and she wanted a new economics. She and another chap wrote this textbook, but it was far too difficult to take on. She was trying to usurp Samuelson's position in economics education. And, you know, she died 23 years ago, but... you know, you ask a young economist, they would have no idea who Joan Robinson is, or even Keynes for that matter. Some of these textbooks that are coming out, I often look at the index, and you're lucky to see Keynes in the index. And if it is, it's only one or two page references.
This is National Interest on ABC Radio National. My guest is Alex Milmo, Senior Lecturer in Economics at the University of Ballarat, also President of the History of Economic Thought Society of Australia. So, Alex Milmo, what are students learning? They're learning what to be technicians? They're learning to crunch numbers? Is that what you learn in economics?
Yeah, that's de rigueur in economics education today, and that's fair enough. Economists actually, when they were asked this question, said they were doing just about enough mathematics and enough econometrics and statistical manipulation, etc. But we in the History of Economic Thought Society of Australia, which I represent, that august body of grey intellects, we believe that we should have more HET. And it's fascinating.
HET being a history of economic thought.
Yeah, the woman who wrote A Beautiful Mind, Sylvia Nassar, just brought out this book in America called Grand Pursuit, and it's about a history of economic genius. And it hasn't come out here yet, but...
we'll have to hope it's made into...
And maybe we might get a movie version,
right.
Who knows?
I hope it's made into a film as well.
Well, I think we should. I think we should have a biography of Keynes or Friedman or Hayek, for that matter. Or Colin Clark, who's one of my favourites.
All fascinating figures, and your point being that we need economists to be more than technicians, more than number crunchers. They need to have there are essentially social scientists. They ought to have a broader perspective.
Yeah, and they've got to also improve their communication skills. And economists in study that I mentioned, or that survey, have also believed that maybe they should have a sense of ethics. You know, they should take some sort of ethical oath. Not so much the academic ones, but more the money market ones, I would suspect. Particularly in Wall Street.
Well, let's talk again about the way in which we see economists in our media, because increasingly, and you've written about this, the commentary we get comes from economists who are actually employed by the big banks or other financial institutions. They're the talking heads on our media these days. Is that a problem?
I think they amplify that jitteriness again. I mean, it's, you know, maybe there's obviously an appetite for it, though. I mean, I always say, well, who do these people speak on behalf of? And they speak on behalf of the banks and their superannuation trusts and super funds, etc.
So they might not
be objective.
Yeah.
And the other objection, of course, is they have better suits and they get better payrolls and salaries, etc. And I just think you ask a young student, what does an economist do? Oh, he reports on economic data, he reads the share market, he talks about interest rate and if the interest rate's going up. That's not what economics is about. Economics is about a worldly wisdom, about philosophy. It's about history. It's about ideas. And, you know, this mind-broadening sense that only historians of economic thought and economic historians and old economists tend to actually go back to economic history and history of economic thought. They tend to see the relevance of it as they grow older.
But many economists working for banks, some of the senior ones, are also very erudite, very broadly trained.
Yeah. John Edwards is, Saul Eslick is, and they're great communicators, and they're well worth the salary that we pay them.
And the media, I mean, from a media perspective, I guess what journalists want is someone who's going to give them a direct answer, who's going to be able to perform on the media, and who's not going to say, well, it's complicated, and on the one hand this, and on the other hand that.
That's one of the arguments why academic economists basically shot themselves in the foot, you know, and they want more time to reflect on the question posed to them before they get back to you. And of course, we can't wait that long.
The government these days contracts in a lot of its economic policy advice. It gets advice from the private sector. And does that mean that university economists and people who aren't in the private sector, are they being increasingly sidelined?
That was one of the economists said that at the recent conference of economists, that the academic economists with a great specialization, say, in tax policy were being, to use another economic phrase, crowded out of policy debate. It'll be interesting to watch this October tax summit to see if academic economists still get a shoe in. Some academic economists still do get a shoe in, like Andrew Lay and John Quiggin, but for the most part, I'm a bit worried about the consolidation of economic expertise because they almost seem to be challenging the power of the Treasury and the RBA when they make these pronouncements or put out a report. And the fact that they're private sector means, oh, well, they must be better in the public sector, which goes back to J.K. Galbraith used to say this, that you know, the private sector was innately superior than the public sector. You have that that bias in people's minds.
Mm. Well, Alex Milmo, thank you for joining us in the National Interest.
Thank you.
Alex Milmo is Senior Lecturer in Economics at the University of Ballarat. And you can share your thoughts on the way economics is discussed in Australia via our website abc.net.au/rn/national interest or on the feedback line 1300 936 222.